And so let's get started. It's the day after exam number 3, and some people are still in shock, but we're going to start really exciting bonds. Oh boy, are these exciting. In the meantime, you're going to think about what you want to do, because we can't put everything into the semester. I apologize. Part of it is my problem, but also part of it is just this stupid calendar. This semester is not very good. So do think about what you want to do, realizing that it's my decision, and I'll do what I damn well please. All right, so. Oh, joke. Who's got a good joke? Did politics are always upon us, and did you hear that there was a weighty conversation going on between a priest, a rabbi, and a minister? And they were talking about the ultimate hot button issue, they were talking about when life begins, the ultimate hot button issue. And the priest said, on this issue, we are resolute. We believe that life begins at the moment of conception. And the minister said, well, we take a more relaxed, some might say liberal view. We believe that life begins when the fetus can exist outside the womb of the mother on its own. And the rabbi said, ah, you're both crazy. Life begins when the kids leave home and the dog dies. Yeah, I know. How do you make fun of abortion? It's a tough one to do. That's a good one. Life begins when the kids leave home and the dog dies. Okay, here you go. All right. So now, I have to get rid of this. I have to get rid of that. That's a mistake. I know, we got to talk about them, but weren't stocks exciting? Weren't they something? But then they make you, yeah, I think so. But guess what, folks? Are bonds exciting? No. Bonds are boring. Bonds are stodgy. Bonds are reliable. And long before the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Andrew Carnegie, who you might have heard of, Carnegie Mellon University, Carnegie Hall, one of the industrialists of the late 19th century, said, gentlemen prefer bonds. Why is that? Because stocks can make you pretty darn rich, and they can also make you pretty darn sad. And what are bonds? Well, they are loans. And we've discussed this a little bit, right? And some of you, I know bond, it's sometimes hard. It's much easier to think of a corporation and can understand that, even though stocks are, you know, somewhat confusing to many. So why don't we first take a look at a bond? Usually I don't do this until the end, but let's take a look at a bond quote. Here it is. Oh, by the way, how are we doing? Almost 7% again, folks. We're up to, didn't we hit, someone said we hit 8%. I don't think we hit 8%. We had 7%, but now we're back up to 8%. And so here is a bond quote. Recent a bond quote in the, 2 seconds. Here it is. Oh, I made it into a TIFF. That was dumb. But here's a bond quote from the Los Angeles Times. And so here, this is a solicitation. This company is trying to sell bonds. And the first thing I want you to look at is the minimum investment. So who are bonds normally solicited to? Very wealthy individuals. It turns out that bond trading is nowhere near as active as stock trading. You know, people are trading stocks $500, $100, whatever, maybe some more, $5,000. But here, they don't even want you to show up until you got $25,000. So that's the first thing we learn about bonds. Also, these are muni bonds. We'll just discuss. These are nonprofit organizations that are, IRS kisses and blesses them, so they get to issue federal tax exempt. Notice they use the term tax free. IRS doesn't like that term, tax free. They want you to use tax exempt. And because they're muni bonds in the state of California, and this is obviously the LA Times, it's going after California residents, we don't pay state income taxes. But notice, look at those yields. They're really, really, I know, Ken's going, no, not me. Well, yeah, but that, people are falling all over themselves right now to buy bonds paying 2 and 3%. And I disagree. I'd much rather have a stock that's paying 2 or 3%, even though what's the difference? Exactly. These interest payments for the next however many years. What is this? This matures in 2023. This matures in 2030. These interest payments must be made by these entities. They can't next month, next quarter, say, oh, we've suspended our dividend. They're not allowed to do that. They have to pay the interest payments. And then when the bond matures, they must pay you the $1,000 back. And notice that some of them are they're all callable. These are callable, which we're going to talk about callable means. That means they can refinance the loans starting in 2022. Until then, they have to keep making the payments. They can't call in the loans. We'll discuss call feature. And the same thing is true here. These are callable in 2025. And what does this mean? We'll discuss what that means later on. That's actually 1,020. 1,000, you have to add a zero. And their price, we'll discuss the pricing a little bit later. So does it make sense? What's going on? You are lending your money to these entities. And they're going to pay you back. Whoa. Where are we? Resume the slideshow. They're going to pay you back interest over the time period. Bonds, there are some actual instances where individuals issued bonds, but it's usually a corporation, a state or local government, or the federal government. And investors who buy bonds are loaners instead of owners. Make sense? Yeah, okay, good. Now, what's the trust indenture? That's the contract. It's like a mortgage. It's like a mortgage, and it's huge, and there's all kinds of lawyers and CPAs involved, and it stipulates the protective covenants, the obligation of the bond issuer. For example, did we have a bake sale to build that stadium? No. The Southwestern Community College District went to the voters of the South Bay and said, look, we're Southwestern Community College. We want to fix up the campus. We want to put some solar panels on there. We want to build a new stadium and a few other buildings. We need $180 million. And so will you allow us to borrow that money? And the voters said yes. And so now those bond payments and the interest payments and eventually the principal will be paid by taxes on the property taxes. So anybody who owns a house in the South Bay is going to be paying an extra, I think it's $50 average, it depends on how much your house is worth, but an extra $50 a year to pay for that stadium over the next 30 years. Plus, in the covenants, it said that we had to build the stuff that we said we're going to build. Within reason, there were some options for moving things around, but we couldn't give ourselves raises or go on a cruise or whatever. So the bond trustee, the commercial bank, the trust company, oversees those obligations. So very similar. It's very similar to a mortgage. When you get into a mortgage, you have made certain, most people don't think about these but until it happens. For example, you must keep homeowners insurance on your house. If you don't, then the mortgage company has the ability, you signed away, that they can turn around and buy the insurance for you. So when you enter into loans, you are often, not only saying I'll pay the interest, I'll pay the principal payments, you're also having other protective covenants. Why would you invest in a bond? Well, you're boring. No. I apologize. I sometimes. I don't know about you, but bonds right now, they're not exciting. And this is, I'm 58 years old, folks. I know you think I'm a lot older than that. But I really should have more bonds in our portfolio. Yes?
I wouldn't know why we do the bonds like this stadium, but not the Chargers stadium.
Well, because those bonds are not going to be 100. In fact, but we didn't. The whole $180 million wasn't just for the stadium. Okay, that wasn't just for the stadium. You notice the solar panels. I don't know how much those things cost. And we're going to build out the corner lot. I don't know how much the stadium cost, but it was, anyone guess, anybody in the construction? Probably had $20, $30 million for that stadium. Anybody want to guess? I don't know. Ask Steve Crook.
What?
$43 million for the stadium? Okay, so a little bit more than what I thought. But still, tens of millions. How much will the Chargers stadium cost? Wrong. That's what the Chargers did. Oh, it's only going to be half a billion. It's probably going to be $1.2 or $1.4 billion when all is said and done. And then, remember, you got to pay interest, and you got to pay the principal back, and over the next 30 years, the city of Remember, Chula, I don't know if you remember a few years ago, Chula Vista was saying, we'll do it, we'll build the stadium. And people are going, you're out of here. Chula Vista can't come up with that kind of cash. And so the city of San Diego, which is what, five times bigger than Chula Vista? What is it? Chula Vista is 240,000?
Yeah.
About 240? San Diego is 1.3 million, 1.2 million. So San Diego will be caught with the... There's some talk about getting the county involved. Have you heard about that? Getting SANDAG involved so that the cost will be spread all over the county. I'm sure Encinitas is going to be really happy about that. Gee, screw you. We're not interested. Because they say, oh, someone's going to pay for it. And the Chargers want it downtown. They want it downtown, which means it'll at least cost $1.4 billion. We don't know what that money means. You and I, we can't even think about what $1.5 billion is. Okay, so why invest in bonds? Because you want interest. Often bondholders, that's what they live off of. If they have enough money, they throw it into bonds, and that's their income. And they know that there's always a chance of what's called default, the interest payments, the principal payments not being paid. In general, the bond issuers pay their debts. Do most people pay their mortgages during normal times? Say yes. Do most people pay their car loans and their credit cards? Yeah. And then we're going to spend a lot of time discussing this potential for capital gain or loss. What? Well, if interest rates fall, there's a potential for capital gains. But if interest rates rise, there's a potential for capital losses. This is the most trickiest part about bonds, is this seesaw effect. But if you... Yes?
So right now, it's good because interest are low, right?
What's good? It's good to sell bonds now, in my humble opinion. Because what we're going to see is this idea of a seesaw. If interest rates go down, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, we're going to see this in a few slides. If interest rates go down, bond prices go up. So being the contrarian, you would say, now's a great time to sell your bonds because the prices are high. But there's other people saying, no, you don't understand. Interest rates could even go lower. That's how much longer we have to go until the economy revives to the point where we actually can raise interest rates. And there's two schools of thought. There's more than two. But if I were a big bondholder now, which I'm not, I would want to sell my bonds. But other people are saying, you don't understand. We got another 10 years of this low interest rate environment. We're nowhere near out of the woods yet. And other people are saying, you're a fool. Interest rates are going to skyrocket. Bonds are going to become, going to get clobbered. We'll see. And some bonds can be converted into stock. Huh? They're called convertible bonds. And doesn't that remind you of a convertible car? Real exciting, sexy, wind blowing through your hair.
How is that?
What, a convertible stock or a convertible bond or a convertible car? You give the company your bond and they give you some stock back. You say, I want to convert my bond into stock. Huh? Yeah, don't worry about it. It's part of hybrid securities. We'll get to it later. Bondholders are first in line for repayment. If the company goes under, the bondholders are right at the end of the line. Well, not really. The tax man and the payroll comes first. But in terms of the investors, bondholders are first in line. Who's at the back of the line? Stockholders. And that's why when you see a company go bankrupt, the stock is usually just decimated. The stock becomes worthless because the bondholders get to pick the carcass first. They're the ones who get the first dibs, and they might get 50% or 60% of their investment back, or maybe less, or maybe more. But after they've gotten through with what assets are available, the stockholders usually wind up with nothing. Bond prices are far less volatile than stocks, but they still fluctuate. They still go up and down as interest rates go up and down. But if we have a long-term perspective, we can reasonably expect 4, 5, 6% for our muni and treasury bonds, 6, 7, 8% for our corporate bonds. But right now, are they paying anywhere close to this? As we just saw, we saw a couple of muni bonds paying 2 and 3%. and the 10-year Treasury bond is paying under 2%. I forget exactly, like 1.9 or something, 1.8. So right now, bonds are paying really low rates. That means bond prices are really high, as we'll see as we continue. By far, the most misunderstood feature about bonds is their inverse relationship with interest rates. And there's the seesaw. When interest rates fall, bond prices rise. When interest rates rise, bond prices fall. And if you just keep the image of the seesaw, you should do well. But you will notice that this trips people up who are in the industry, who've been in the industry, who've been registered representatives and insurance agents and the like, and they've worked in the industry and other people in the industry. This inverse relationship just gets people, they zig when they should have zagged. But I always keep that idea of the seesaw, the sube y bajo. How do you say it? Sube y baja. That's up and down. Okay, over the long term, stocks have outperformed bonds. So if you're a long-term investor, why would you invest in bonds? Well, we know that stocks are more volatile. They carry more risk as measured by standard deviation, which is not a perfect measurement. Bonds are often offer an element of stability. And you folks from the naval world, we call it ballast. You like that term, ballast? That's the stuff you put in the bottom of the ship to keep it from rocking back and forth. So people sometimes think of a bond as ballast. You know, the top of the ship is the stocks, and that's going back and forth, but the bottom stays. I don't know if that helps. It doesn't. And for some investors, stocks are simply too risky. They reason, look, if I can obtain my long-term goals without taking on the risk of being invested in stocks, so be it. The I can sleep better at night factor, do you want to eat well, stocks, or do you want to sleep well, bonds? Bonds also make good intermediate-term investments, whereas stocks make good long-term investments. And sometimes bonds are just screaming good deals. But that's when interest rates go up, not when interest rates go down. What are some of the risks? Well, we already discussed interest rate risk. We didn't give it a name, but the interest rate risk is the risk that when rates fall, bond prices will rise, but when rates rise, bond prices will fall. However, if you intend to sell your bonds in the future, the interest rate risk is real for you. But if you have no intention of selling your bonds, if you're just going to collect the interest payments and take the $1,000 back, and I keep using the term thousand, and I didn't say it yet, but bonds, you normally sell in $1,000 pieces. Even though we saw a $25,000 minimum, they sell in denominations of 1,000. Some sell in 5 and 10,000, but in this class, we will always use $1,000 for our par value, our face value. Purchasing power risk, also sometimes called inflation risk, the risk that your purchasing power will fall if inflation outstrips your return from the bonds. Inflation is normally the bondholder's worst nightmare. And that's why bond investors are often called bond ghouls, because they don't want the economy to get hot and start roaring, because then that usually means inflation picks up. So they're often happy when there's a recession, and that also knocks down interest rates, which makes their bond prices go up. So they're often called bond ghouls. The one that we really worry about once we dabble in riskier bonds is default risk, business risk, financial risk. The risk that the bond issuer will default on interest payments or principal payments. This is much less of a risk with munis and treasury. The United States Treasury, I don't care what anybody says, listen to talk show radios and right-wing goofballs and left-wing goofballs. The Treasury is not going bankrupt, folks. The United States government is not going bankrupt. We'll pay its debts, right, won't it? You think so? I think so. Although some munis have gone belly up in the past, you might have heard of Detroit going through bankruptcy, Stockton, a couple other cities in California. I think is it San Bernardino? Somewhere out in San Bernardino. Stockton is the big one. They're going through bankruptcy. But it's very, very rare. It just doesn't happen often. Liquidity risk is the risk that there's not enough buyers out there for your bonds. It can be a problem with thinly traded bonds. In general, bonds don't trade as often as stocks because people often buy them, or entities buy them, such as mutual funds or pension funds. They buy them and just collect the interest and then wait for them to redeem. So in general, bonds don't trade as much as stocks do. But if you have high quality corporate bonds, muni bonds, treasury bonds, somebody out there wants to buy your bonds. And then the call risk. We'll discuss the call feature in detail in a few slides. And that's also called prepayment risk. It's the risk that the bond will be called away from you. And so think about it, folks. If you have an interest payment for your credit card at 24.9%, wouldn't you like to go out and get a better credit card interest rate, 14.9 or whatever? And then what you do is you pay off the one credit card with the other credit card, right? Refinance. Do the same thing with mortgages, car loans, and the same thing is true with corporate bonds and muni bonds. They will call in the bonds. Here, bonds. Come here, bonds. And they will issue new bonds and refinance at a lower interest rate. And the Treasury has never issued callable bonds. It doesn't mean they won't in the future, but their bonds are non-callable. The Treasury will continue to pay you whatever interest rates they're paying you until the bond matures, and then you get your $1,000 back. Coupon rate, nominal rate. These mean the same thing. And this is where it gets a little tricky. What the hell does coupon mean? Where should we put it over here? Nominal rate. The nominal means named. So we could also use the term named. This is the fixed rate that the bond pays. Interest on bonds is usually paid every 6 months. So we call them semi-annual payments. Although there's a few bonds that pay quarterly, every month, up to a year, we will always think in terms of semi-annual bond payments because most all bonds pay every 6 months. Now, where does the term coupon come from? Well, many years ago, when you bought a bond, you actually got a document. And it had the trust indenture. It was a lot smaller than it is now because of the lawyers. But at the back of the document were all these coupons. And every 6 months, you would clip your coupon, put it in an envelope, send it off to the company or the municipality, and boom, they'd send you back a check. Do you think that stuff happens now? Hell no. No, it's all electronic, folks. But to this day, we still use the term coupon rate. And I have my reasons for it. I mean, not my reasons. I think the reason they do that is to just make people go, huh? So that they can't understand what the hell people are talking about. Oh, it's a coupon rate. Don't you understand? You know, we're more important than you are. We can charge you a lot more to help us. I don't know. But to this day, earning interest from a bond is often called clipping the coupon, even though now virtually all transactions are done electronically. And the principal. The principal is the capital that must be repaid at maturity. It is called the par value. The face value. Oh, by the way, on the website, and I'm not going to stop now. I apologize I'm going too fast, but there's a reason for that. I want to get up to 24 by the end of our hour. On the website is a Google search on images for bearer bonds. That's what they're called, bearer bonds, because the bearer of the bond is the person who sends in the coupon, clips the coupon and sends it in. And so you can check and see what these things look like. Although you'll never see one, you know, maybe there's a few that are still in existence, I doubt it. And the principal is the face value, the par value. Most all bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments. So even though there are some that are denominated in $5,000 and $10,000 increments, in this class, the face value, the par value, will always be $1,000. Putting the coupon rate and the principal together tells you how much interest you will receive each year. So with a coupon rate of 7% and a principal, a face value of $1,000, you're going to get $70 of interest. So if it's a 6% bond, you're going to get? $60. Everyone should say $60. Wait till I ask you. If it's a 6% bond, you get? $60. If it's a 9% bond, you get? $90. Don't write 9 cents. As your annual interest. $90 for a 9% bond. $30 for a 3% bond. Therefore, normally bond investors just say, oh, I bought a 7% 30-year bond. And of course, they might have bought one, more than one bond. In fact, if they are really a bond trader, a bond holder, a bond investor, they probably came up with $25,000 and bought 25 of them. Yes?
So 7% is the normal rate?
That's the nominal rate. That's right. That's the coupon rate. So if I ask you what the coupon rate for a 7% bond, you say? Everyone should say 7%. It's like, what's your name, Bob? Bob, right? So what's the nominal rate for a 7% bond? What's the coupon rate for a 7% bond? It's that easy, okay? And how much interest are you getting every year? Actually getting it, $35 twice a year, but that's okay. Say $70. Okay. The maturity date is the date on which the bond matures and the principal must be repaid. Term bonds, which are more common, mature all at once. And so you wonder, isn't it like a mortgage? Well, not really. When you pay off your mortgage, every month you're paying off some interest and some principal. But bonds don't work that way. They wait until the end, and then they pay off the whole thing. Figure that out. But there are serial bonds. Serial bonds is where a company or a municipality will issue a series of bonds that mature at different times. So they'll be 5-year, 10-year, 15-year, 20-year. And they sometimes are called tranches. Trenches, I don't know why, but that's the French word, tranche. And so they mature at various portions of the term of the bond. So, but most bonds are term bonds. Notes. In the industry, a bond that matures between 2 and 10 years is technically called a note. So it's not the 10-year Treasury bond, it's the 10-year Treasury note. Now, if you're like me, I couldn't care less. So I use the term bond and note interchangeably, even though a note is never more than 10 years. But bonds are sometimes 30, 50, 100 years. So if you are that kind of person, that you're a stickler for the proper usage of the term, never say the 5-year Treasury bond, say the 5-year Treasury note. And then once it's less than a year, then it's corporate paper or it's a treasury bill. It's not a note or a bond. It's less than a year. It's a paper. Remember the corporate paper, banker's acceptance notes? Well, there's a note. Okay. There are some bonds that are called perpetuities, which I love that name. Perpetuities. You get to spit on your friends. Perpetuity, and or consoles, and they never mature. Mexico. Just issued some 100-year bonds. I don't know, just a couple years ago. Have you heard about those? Paying a pretty good interest rate. And so, hey, those of you who want to, you get paid in pesos, so be careful. All right, so that's that bonds versus note. Now the call provision. We already made mention of this. This is the provision that specifies whether and under what circumstances the issuer can retire, prepay, refinance the bond prior to the maturity date. If interest rates drop, just as a homeowner would want to refinance their mortgage, a bond issuer would want to refinance the bond loans. And that's why it's called the call provision. Here, bonds! Come here, bonds! The bond issuer calls in the bonds. You, as the bond investor, don't like this feature. Why? Because it means interest rates have dropped, and now your principal that you get back, if you want to invest it back into bonds, is going to earn less interest because you have to buy bonds at the current interest rates. So it's called prepayment risk. Other factors being equal, investors would prefer non-callable bonds over callable bonds. Well, if it's a non-callable bond, the interest rate's going to be lower because it's more preferable. So people are going to, you know, say, hey, well, I'll take a lower interest rate for the ability not to be called away from me. All other things being equal, and they never are, callable bonds will pay higher interest rates because they can call them in. There are three types of call provisions. Freely callable, which is not that typical. Usually there's some kind of call protection period, call deferment period. Remember the solicitation? Some of them weren't callable until 2022. And the others weren't callable until 2025. And then non-callable means they're, you know, you can't do it. Most corporate and muni bonds are freely callable or have a deferred call protection period. Treasuries, so far, have always been non-callable, which is the least desirable, obviously being callable, and the most desirable is non-callable, and deferred call is in between. Cool? All right. Now, the call premium. This now we can go back and take a look at the advertisement. The call premium says, look, if you're going to call my bond away, you've got to pay me more than the par value. You've got to pay me a $30, a $50, in this case, $85 premium. You can think of it like the prepayment penalty on some loans. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. But some loans, especially mortgages, if you pay off the loan within a certain amount of time, they will hit you with a prepayment penalty. They'll say, look, this is such a great interest rate, we're going to penalize you if you refinance. And so the call price is obviously whatever the par value is plus the premium. So let's go back to the solicitation very quickly. And we see that these are deferred until 2022, at which you have to pay, now you got that at zero, you have to move the decimal point to the right. They have to pay $1,020 for every bond that was issued, whereas these guys are deferred until 2025, but then they can get to call them back at par. They get to call them back at $1,000 again. And the reason we'll discuss this when we get the bond quotes, but just move the decimal point one to the right. And then let's go back to the premium bonds, discount bonds. Now, we're getting back into this guy right here. A premium bond is a bond that is selling for more than that original face value. And a discount bond is a bond that is selling for less than that face value. The premium bond occurs when the rates go down. The discount bond occurs when rates go up, but also occurs when and if the investment community believes that the bond issuer is in danger of default, in which case they will dump the bonds, supply and demand, and the price will fall. So not only does it fall when interest rates rise, it also falls when people believe that the bond is in danger. If there's no discount, there's no premium, the bond is said to be selling at par. And so this is what starts to drive people nuts. Wait a minute. It's a $1,000 loan, right? Why would it ever sell for more or less than $1,000? Why would a bond sell at a premium or a discount to its face value? You're only going to get the $1,000 back when the bond matures. Well, no. Not, you wouldn't sell it for $1,000. You're right. You're only going to get $1,000 back. But if the interest rate on your bond doesn't change, then something's got to give. Because we say bonds are fixed. They are. That coupon rate, that nominal rate does not change. But the world keeps changing behind the bond. Interest rates in the marketplace go up and down. So instead of your interest rate changes, what changes is the price of the bond. The price of the bond changes to reflect what's going on in the investment community. Does that make sense? It drives people insane. But that's how it works. You bought the bond for $1,000, but if interest rates go up, you can sell it for more than $1,000. Now, if you wait too long, if you wait till it matures, what are you going to get? $1,000. You're only going to get what the maturity value is. But if interest rates rise, your bond is going to fall. Do you have to sell it at a discount? No, you can just hang on to it and wait for it to mature. So remember the image of the seesaw. Here's an example. If your bond is paying 10%, what are you getting every year in interest payments? Everyone is saying 100. How much are you getting? $100, right. Now, this is an extreme example, but this is exactly what happened from the 1980s to the 2000s. Interest rates have... This is much less extreme. I'm getting crazy here. 8%. If interest rates fall to 8%, now what is a bond paying? Only $80. An investor would have to basically pay $1,250 to get that $100. So would you want to sell your $1,000 bond for $1,000? No. You would demand a premium. The bond, the result is your bond is worth more now than it was, and if you sold it, you'd actually have a capital gain. It would go up in value. Now, is it going to go up to $1,250? No. It depends on how much time is left in the bond. It's not going to go up commensurate with what a new bond would have to pay to get the same amount of interest, but it's going to go up depending on how much time is left. And the same thing is true if we go the other way. If you have a 10% bond and now interest rates go up to 12%, your bond is still paying you $100, but now new bonds are paying $120. Is anybody going to pay you $1,000 for your bond? No. They're going to say, look, I want a discount. If you want me to buy your 10% bond, I can go out for $1,000 and buy a bond paying $120. I'm going to want you to drop the price. Now, will the price drop to $833.33? The exact amount we needed to get $100? No, because eventually the bond is going to mature at $1,000. If you sold your bond now, you would have a capital loss. And on your taxes, you say, hey, I got a capital loss discount. The amount of the premium or the discount is not only related to the amount of the fall or rise of interest rates. In general, the greater the fall or rise in interest rates, the greater the premium or discount. But the maturity date is also very important. And this is where the analogy of the seesaw makes it's perfect. It's really a great analogy. Because you remember playing on the seesaw? If you got in the middle, your friends were on one side or the other. They went up and down and up and down. But if you were in the middle, did you go that far? No. So the closer you are to the center, the closer you are to the maturity, the less it goes up and down. The maturity date is very important. The longer the maturity, the more you're going to go up and down when the interest rates go up and down. The closer you are to maturity, the more you're like in the middle of the seesaw. Make sense? And that does make sense. Because if I know that I have a long time before I get that $1,000 back, I can take advantage of a higher interest rate or get clobbered by a lower interest rate. Just as the seesaw, farther out you are, the greater the rise and fall. And this is why, when we were back in chapter 4, you might have gone, well, I don't understand. But long-term bonds are actually riskier than short-term bonds. And what happens is, as short-term bonds get shorter and shorter and shorter, they actually start to look like corporate paper and treasury bills and short-term securities. Because once the bond gets to be less than a year before maturity, it looks like a corporate paper. It looks like a treasury bill. Because it's only got a couple interest payments left at that, and then it gets matured back. You get your principal back. So here, this is a graph, and I don't really like, I would have turned it around, but they got zero out here. The farther you are to the maturity, say 30 years, the more the premium or the discount will be as interest rates and go up and down. So it's not actually this smooth either. It kind of goes. It's not a smooth curve. Because once you get close, it gets very tight. And when you're farther away, it's much wider. In general, long-term bonds exhibit greater price volatility and a greater opportunity for capital gain or loss. Intermediate and short-term bonds exhibit lesser price volatility and also a lesser opportunity for capital gains of loss. Bonds very close to maturity act very similar to short-term investments, such as money market accounts. However, as I said before, and I'm going to say it again and make sure you get it in there, if you intend to keep the bonds until they mature, do you care about what happens to interest rates? No, you are not concerned about the price volatility. You will always receive the par value of the bond, except in the very rare instance or case of a bond in default. And so this is a slide that goes back to Chapter 5 and shows the yield on stocks, the dividend yield on stocks, and the yield on bonds. And what we see is back in 1960, they were pretty close to one another. And then, as inflation started to raise its ugly head in the 1970s, the baby boom generation came of age. Watergate, gas crisis, oil crisis, disco, very difficult time. Bond yields started to skyrocket. Why? Because bond investors were frightened to death. Inflation kills you. Because think about it, folks. The dollars you're going to get in the future are worth a whole lot less than you thought they were going to be worth because of inflation. So inflation hit the peak in 1980, 1981, and some of you, most of you weren't around, but the Federal Reserve Bank under Paul Volcker, who's still around, by the way. I love that they call Obama a socialist. Paul Volcker is one of his economic advisors. I think he might have left by now. But he was appointed a Republican by Jimmy Carter. Yes, I know, folks, it's hard to believe. We had a president named Jimmy. It's very difficult for people to believe. We had a president named Jimmy. I'm sorry?
Who was that, Ben?
Paul Volcker. He's the real tall guy with the big cigar. You don't see him too much anymore. He keeps a low profile.
But who was he?
He was a person of Wall Street, and he was nominated by Jimmy Carter to be the Federal Reserve President. And Mr. Carter, President Carter, said, we've got to do something about inflation. And Mr. Volcker said, we can do it, but it probably will cost you the election. And that's something else that cost him the election. That was Iran-Contra. No. Iran-Contra was later. Hostage situation. That really hit Jimmy Carter. Plus the name Jimmy. I mean, that's a bad name. Okay. So anyway, Mr. Carter, to his credit, said, yes, do it. And what they did is they jacked up short-term interest rates, caused a serious recession, and then an even more one in 1982, when this is where Reagan was already in by then. And what we see is short-term interest rates hit 22%. And so for just a couple of months there, folks, mortgages were at 17%. And I was young, and I didn't know what the hell I was talking about and doing it. I was saying, I'll never buy a house. And I remember one woman saying, and she was a goofball, but I'm glad I didn't listen to her. She said, 12% mortgages. We'll never see those again. Okay, I'll never buy a house. She was so wrong. And then as inflation came down, look what happens to the yield on bonds. The next Federal Reserve chairperson, Alan Greenspan, called this the Great Moderation. The Great Moderation. Bond rates falling, dividend rates falling as stocks went through the roof, went in two directions, up and way up in the 1990s. And then we had the bottom of dividend yields at 1%. But look, even through the stock market, 2000 to 2002 bear market, interest rates continued to fall, spiked back up again in 2007, and then dropped like a stone. And how often do you see dividend yields greater than bond yields? Not too often. And usually that's a great sign for the stock market, and sure enough it was. And then it happened again in 2012, which was another great time to buy stocks. 2013 was 30% up. And now they're actually, this is December 31st. They've actually gone, this is a 10-year treasury, by the way. This has gone down below 2%, but the stock is still about 1.8. So now they're close to one another. Not necessarily. They usually go in opposite directions. When stocks go low, it's usually because of the recession. Not always. Maybe it's because of a bubble. But if a recession, what happens to interest rates? They go down because the demand for money has lessened, and the Federal Reserve usually tries to knock down interest rates. The Federal Reserve controls the short-term interest rates. The bond market controls long-term interest rates. The Federal Reserve has tried to knock down interest rates, and the bond market, there's not as much demand for money. So when interest rates go down, what happens to bond prices? They go up. So when stocks go down, bonds tend to go up. And when stocks go up, that's because the economy's coming back, things are going great. What happens to interest rates? They go up, right, because of demand for money, and sometimes the Federal Reserve Bank ratchets up short-term interest rates to cool off the economy, and when interest rates go up, bonds go down. So as we're going to see when we get to Chapter 11, the two tend to be counter-cyclical. Bonds and stocks tend to go in opposite directions. But that's not always the case. Sometimes they both go up. Sometimes they both go down. 2008, they both went down big time.
So that's why Janet Yellen is like taking it easy
on the QE. Well, they stopped the quantitative easing. They stopped buying the bonds. Let's not get there. Let's go there. But right, all the indications are is that the economy is getting stronger, albeit very slowly. A lot of it's you millennials. It's all your fault. You won't leave the house. You won't start a new home. You won't go out and buy refrigerators and cars and buy a new home and go out to Home Depot and spend a lot of money. No, forget it. I'm staying home. It's too damn expensive out there. And that's the reason. It's all your fault. So no, I apologize. No, it's not your fault. Okay, so you with me? Okay, so now, when we come back on Tuesday, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do, because the rest of this chapter deals with, we go into detail on treasuries, munis, corporate bonds, and then discuss bond quotes and the like, and bond credit ratings. But what I want you to do now, everybody have a CATS?
Yeah.
I want you to take a few moments to decide what you want to do. And if you're done already, just put it up there. Because what we need to do now is we need to go into detail on these. But what I might do is say, look, I want you to, I'm not sure yet. I have to read what you had to say. Anybody want to publicly comment on what they want to do over the next few weeks?
I think we should choose materials and not cover in class, make it mandatory to do it online.
Yeah?
Me too.
You like that idea?
Yeah, because otherwise it'll make the final more harder.
Right, exactly. If we get rid of one of the exams, it'll make the final harder. Yes.
My problem with that is like sometimes you don't do that. You can like just be saying you are.
Not sometimes. It's often. When I do that, I do it very infrequently to the face-to-face class. But when I do it, I say, now you all went over that part, right? Lie to me. Tell me lies. Come on, tell me. Make me feel good. You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, because people, with the best of intentions, so you just, remember, it's my ultimate decision. It's a benevolent dictatorship, not a democracy. But I want to hear what you have to say. Any questions, any thoughts? Aren't bonds exciting? No. But we'll eventually, after we get through the discussion, this is a part that actually could be thrown onto the web and say, look, just go over this, folks. This is not really that hard. We're going to go through the different types of bonds, and then we'll discuss bond ratings. We will do this in class. It only takes a couple moments to go through bond ratings and then bond quotes, and then we'll be done with chapter 9. Chapter 10 then gets into the calculations of bonds. We will go over chapter 10 calculations in class. We will do chapter 11. We will do options and futures. We will do shorting and margining. I might throw out the discussion in detail of the different types of bonds, or might throw out real estate, other investment alternatives, or we might throw out the exam. I'm not sure. Okay, so please don't put your name on it. Put it up here, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Study, study, study. Bonds are exciting. Wait till you see, especially if you have the book. You start reading the book, I'll tell you, folks, it's so valuable. If you have insomnia, read chapters on bonds. You will cure your insomnia immediately. Okay, who snuck in? I'm sorry?